The advice and recommendations in this program are for general education purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional before beginning or changing any course of health treatment.
This is House Calls with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email housecall@cfra.com or text us at 580-580. Now, here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Welcome to House Calls, edition number 915 for this February the 25th, 2024. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening live from the studios of News Talk 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And we're taking your call shortly at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number, and your comments and questions at 580-580-580-580. And with March coming up and March break, a lot of people will be leaving the country. A lot of people go down to Florida, go down with the children to the various parks down there, Disney and Universal Studios and other stuff. And in Florida, they're having a measles outbreak, partly because of COVID, vaccination rates were lessened. People did not have the opportunity to get vaccinated or get their children vaccinated, and some just don't want to bother with vaccinations for various reasons. But because of that, if you have children or yourself have not had been vaccinated or had the right number of vaccinations, you can be at risk of contracting measles. Measles is a viral infection. It is the most contagious virus that we know in the world. And I'm going to be staying away from hyperbole. I'm just going to be stating the facts of what the statistics are, what happens to people globally. As with any infection, you'll hear people say, well, I had this and nothing happened to me. And they're right. I mean, let's face it. The diseases themselves do cause harm. They cause tremendous harm. For measles, 140,000 children per year die, predominantly in areas where there isn't very much vaccination or vaccinations haven't been able to reach the area. But that still happens in societies where we do have vaccinations and universal vaccination programs, where you'll hear of pockets of communities where you have a measles outbreak because of lower vaccination rates. Now, the vaccination rates for measles, in order to protect you, because it has a 90% infection rate, that is, you walk into a room, if you are unvaccinated or you have had only one vaccine, so under-vaccinated, you run the risk, and actually a great risk, of getting infected. And because it is so contagious, you can infect others as well. The incubation time can run anywhere from a week or more. Symptoms usually start 4 days after the infection. Usually you get a high fever at first, and then the rash comes out, usually over your entire body, the rash comes out on the fourth or fifth day, and the fever tends to subside. But the harm from the virus itself, and this is a statement from the Chief Public Health Officer of Canada, talking about the global increase in measles. So they're making recommendations for people, if you're planning to travel, what to do regarding your measles status and measles vaccine status. So if your child is less than a year of age, they are recommending a vaccination. Now, what will happen, though, is that when you come back, they still have to get their MMR vaccine again after a year of age. Public health, especially in Ontario, and I think in the rest of Canada, doesn't recognize measles vaccines before a year of age as having had that vaccine. They're not convinced that the child will develop enough of an immune response after the first vaccine if you are under 12 months of age. And so they'll likely need another one when they come back or when they are a year of age. But it is a precautionary way to help try to at least give them some protection because they are extremely vulnerable, right? They are unvaccinated under 12 months of age. They run the risk in terms of babies. Again, this is a global population-based statistic. One out of every 600 babies, so infants that contract measles, will suffer nerve complications, brain complications that can lie dormant for years. And usually sometimes between 5 to 7 years later, they develop significant damage to the brain, sort of lying in wait or lying in state to come out later. One in 20 children will develop pneumonia. 1 in 5 will be hospitalized. And 1 out of every 1,000 children develop a swelling condition in the brain called encephalitis. Encephalo refers to the brain. Itis refers to inflammation. So it's inflammation of the brain that can lead to convulsions, can cause hearing loss, permanent hearing loss, and also intellectual disabilities that follow thereafter. So it's not an innocuous virus. It is a neurological disease. And although many children, you know, we're talking about 1 in such and such number, so that means that, you know, 1 out of 20 children have pneumonia, well, 19 out of 20 don't. But that doesn't mean that we say, well, then let's just not bother protecting anybody, because from a population standpoint, it's a lot of people that are suffering with morbidity. That is the harm from the disease itself, and that can be permanent over their lifetime. And it does cause death. 140,000 children throughout the world, as I mentioned, will die from measles. And that's just the deaths from measles. That doesn't mean you just had 140,000 children in the world that contracted measles. It means you had a lot more that contracted measles. When you think of the statistics I gave regarding hospitalizations and pneumonias and encephalitis, many, many more children. So you're trying to prevent that harm and that lifelong harm that can occur. And when we're faced in our country, in Canada, with shortages of healthcare, with the burgeoning costs and the inability of governments to cover the costs associated with providing care, we want to try and prevent people from getting sick in the first place so that they that the resources that would go to helping those people that had preventable illness can be used for people that have illnesses that are not necessarily preventable. So there's that aspect as well. So the recommendations are from the Public Health Agency of Canada and the Chief Public Health Officer. If you were born before 1970, it is assumed that you had measles because of how contagious it was. And if you did, you are immune to measles. If you're unsure about that, you can get an antibody titer. So you can get a blood test done. We do this routinely for women who are pregnant to see if they had contracted measles or are immune to measles, because measles during pregnancy can also be devastating for both mother and child. And if you find out that your antibody titers are low, then you would get a booster. So that is available to answer that question if you are unsure about whether you are immune to measles or not. The other is for children. Ideally, if you're going to be traveling, you want to have the vaccine 2 weeks before you travel. If you know, and most parents will know, if the child has had 1 or 2 measles vaccines, if they have their vaccination card, you'll know whether they need that extra booster. Now, most children, I have to say in Ottawa, most children are vaccinated at least at 12 months of age. At least in our practice, we ensure that all the children are vaccinated. And you may want to just check and see if they received their second dose when they were 4 years of age. If they haven't, there's no record of that, then public health will provide the vaccine, but also your physician's office will do that as well and provide that vaccine for anybody that has had only one dose of the vaccine. But it is, try and get it done before two weeks before you leave, because you want to have your body have a chance to develop the antibodies. Even if you can't get it before 2 weeks, you're still going to have some effect. It's not all or none, but it's still extremely important to try and get that timing done to get the maximum benefit. The people that are most at risk, when you look at, again, population-based studies, children less than 5 years of age, adults that are older than 20 years of age, pregnant women, and people who are immunocompromised are at higher risk of complications for measles. Normally, when you want, if to say that a population is completely protected, 95% of the population needs to be immune to measles, and that's usually through vaccination. In Canada, the vaccination rate globally throughout Canada is about 91%. So 91.6% from the National Immunization Coverage Survey says 91.6% of two-year-olds in Canada have received at least one dose of a vaccine, but only 79.2% of seven-year-olds have received two doses. And with two doses, the protection from measles with two doses is almost 100% at preventing infection. And that's why up to now, for the most part, we have not seen measles in Canada being eradicated. But just because it's been eradicated doesn't mean that it's still, that it's gone. People come and they travel, they bring things back, and it starts all over again. So we can't be complacent about that. So that's the advisory from the Public Health Agency of Canada and the Chief Public Health Officer, Medical Health Officer, about measles vaccines. And if you are going to be traveling, and even if you're not going to be traveling, it is a devastating illness. You don't want to take that risk for your children, for yourself, because of the consequences of how this can affect the brain, how this can affect the lungs, and affect various sensory organs in your body. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to House Calls. We'll be back with your calls and questions in just a couple of minutes.
They think you really care, but myself I can't deceive. I know it's only make-believe. My one and only prayer is that someday you'll care. My hopes and my dreams come true. My one and only you. No one will ever know how much I love you so. My only prayer will be someday you'll care for me. But it's only make-believe.
Talk 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is a long distance number. You're listening to House Calls. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. We're going to go to line one and speak to Diane in Ottawa. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
The first thing, if I could just do a quick follow-up
sure.
to your measles discussion. I had read the directive by Dr. Tam, and I was born in Alberta, and I'm 71, so I'm a senior. The government there did put out a really helpful list of all vaccinations companies when they started, et cetera. So I know I was never vaccinated mm-hmm. when I was a child, even when they did supplemental from grade 1 to 9. My mother kept me home whenever there were epidemics because I had other health issues.
Right.
You're right. I could possibly have the antibodies, but I'm sort of doubtful. So I guess what I wanted to get clarified, if it turns out through the antibody test that I have no antibodies in my system, we're traveling in April. Do I get a booster? Do I get the first vaccination and then try to get the second vaccination? Where do I start there? And the second part of that is, if there isn't enough time to get the test, should I just get a booster?
Those are great questions. So the booster and the initial one are both the same vaccine. So there's no difference between the two.
The booster and the first one.
Yeah, the first. Okay, so you would get okay. the one vaccine. So if you're not able to get the titer, there's no harm in getting the vaccine. So so if you have never had the vaccine before, or if you had the vaccine before, or you had measles before, but you don't know what the titer is, and you don't have time to get the titer.
Right.
It's an inexpensive vaccine, doesn't cost you anything to get it. You're better off just getting the shot before you travel. I mean, really,
right.
there's no downside to that. There's no harm
yeah.
from it.
Okay.
You're not going to get sick from it. It works extremely well and should protect you.
Okay.
So, and the recommendations are one dose for you. And you can
okay.
always do titers later on to see what the
right.
result was. But
well, you know, the healthcare system, by the time I book to get in to see the family physician,
sure.
then we get the test, get the results, get another appointment to get the results, then get, you know, the weeks go by. So you've answered my question. Basically, I'll just ask for the booster.
Yeah. And so the recommendations are it's one dose for anybody that was born before 1970.
Right.
So you would get one
yeah.
dose. So yeah. So the
okay.
answer would be,
If you can't get to see
your family doctor before you leave, or it's just going to be too difficult and the two-week window won't be a two-week window, then
yeah.
the recommendations are just get the vaccine.
Right. And for people that do not have family physicians, I know that pharmacies are not offering that. So is Ottawa Public Health offering
Yes, so my
it
understanding
at this point?
Is Ottawa Public Health has their vaccine clinics and that people can get that done through them.
Yeah, it wasn't overly clear on their website when I looked the other day.
It's probably
they
best
talked
to,
a lot about COVID and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they didn't particularly mention.
It's probably
you
best
know.
Best to call them to get an idea of when the clinics
right, okay.
are. But I would think that if they're making, I guess logically, if they're making
yeah.
recommendations that people get
yeah.
the vaccines and there's a family physician shortage and people don't have
yeah.
some people don't have family doctors, that they would offer the service to be able to provide that, since that's their raison d'être, right? Is
yes,
public
exactly,
health?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It just doesn't show up. Bang.
Right.
But this is only red measles. We're not talking about rubella at this point. For this
so this
booster,
is just measles.
Are we?
That's right.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I had another question.
Sure.
I've been diagnosed with epiretinal membrane. And
yes.
it's centrally located. And it's located in an eye where there is also a cataract. So I went for an assessment with an ophthalmologist.
Yes.
Who indicated, well, it's too early for cataract surgery, but the problem with the vision, which isn't overly bad,
mm-hmm.
it's just the glasses don't correct for this, is not the cataract, it's the epiretinal membrane. And I was told there's no treatment, there's no cure, you know, for it. I did do a quick search on some reputable
mm-hmm.
databases, and it did look like there was a type of surgery. Can you comment on that?
Yes, there are some laser therapies. The epiretinal membrane is a layer of tissue that sits on top of the retina. That's
correct.
Why it's called epiretinal. And I can
correct.
It acts
and
like
it
a
wrinkled.
Like a
yeah.
It acts like a thing that blocks light from hitting the retina, so
right.
it
exactly.
can make it more difficult. So there are laser therapies that are reserved for complications. Usually you see this also for people that have what's known as retinal vasculitis, which is an inflammatory condition of the blood vessels in the retina. And because of that, that inflammation causes the formation of this membrane. It's sort of the result of that. And so there are laser therapies that are used to try to destroy that particular membrane, especially if it is causing a significant impairment, vision impairment. So that would be, but again, that's the extent of what I know about it because I'm not an ophthalmologist.
Right,
but the ophthalmologist would be in a better position to tell you whether there is the treatment for it. Usually treatments for the vasculitis, that is the inflamed blood vessels, there are medications that are used to reduce the inflammation and then you get less formation of those membranes. But if it is causing vision impairment, then the ophthalmologist should be able to provide you with some solutions to allow that vision to improve.
He basically said there was nothing that could be done. Period.
Well, the information I'm getting is from UpToDate.com, which is
I'm aware of that.
I use that, and so it says here, laser therapy is reserved for complications of retinal vasculitis, and they give a whole bunch of various diseases that are long names. I'm not going to get into them. Other local procedures are warranted in selected patients. Vitrectomy has been indicated in dense vitreous inflammation, so that's the fluid in the eye that just gets really cloudy, vitreous hemorrhage, retinal detachment, or epiretinal membrane formation. So there are there may be a reason for treating it under those conditions. It may not be that you have that condition. That's why they're saying there's no treatment for it. But again, that's details that I don't have.
And it may be early days.
So the questions are probably best put to the ophthalmologist, exactly what you've asked me, because they have the expertise to be able to provide you with those answers.
Right. Second opinion maybe too. Right. So, yeah, great. Okay, well, you've been very helpful. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Diane. All the best.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
We're going to take a small break and come back with your calls and questions. Lots of comments on the board, so I'm going to get to those. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to House Calls. Back in just a couple of minutes.
The advice and recommendations in this program are for general education purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional before beginning or changing any course of health treatment.
Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin and House Calls on News Talk 580 CFRA. Reach the doctor right now at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or text him at 580-580.
Talk 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372, and your comments and questions at 580-580, and lots of them coming in. So Let's get to them. One says, Dear Dr. Dworkin, I remember having measles as a child 70 years ago. Is it recommended to have the vaccine now? This is from Eve. So if you had measles and you know you had measles, then you don't need the vaccination. You can always do a blood test to see if you are still immune, but it is assumed, and again, assumptions can be sometimes wrong, but it is assumed that if you had measles 70 years ago, that you are going to be immune. But again, your physician, hopefully if you have one, your physician can do the test and let you know for sure if that's the case. Now, there are contraindications where reasons where you can't have the vaccine. And one was from a person says, I'm immune compromised. Is the measles vaccine a live vaccine? Yes, it is an attenuated vaccine, meaning that the virus has been weakened so it doesn't cause disease. But if you are immune compromised, then that virus, even though it's weakened, has nothing to fight against it, right? The whole idea is that the vaccine stimulates your immune system to respond and destroy it. That's how vaccines work. Your body destroys the vaccine and in the process creates the antibodies necessary to prevent the true infection that can come your way. But if you're immunocompromised, you cannot have the vaccine. And that's the reason why it's important to have 95% of our population that is eligible for vaccination to be vaccinated to protect those that cannot be protected or have any resistance. They have no resistance to the infection and the virus itself. So we have to be helpful to those around us that do not have the same advantage of being able to receive the vaccine. Charlie in Manitic says, can you make people aware that the measles, mumps, rubella, MMR vaccine and other vaccines are not mRNA-based vaccines, have been around for a very long time? Yeah, they're not mRNA vaccines. Nothing wrong with the mRNA vaccines, but the technology used is what's called live attenuated. So just a weakened strain of the virus that does not cause measles, but causes the immune response that protects you from the true infection itself. Morning, I'm a 50-year-old male with the vaccination scar of a cocktail of needles. Am I still protected by this surge of measles or a booster? Thanks, it's Chris in South Dundas. Chris, if you're 53 and you likely have had your vaccinations for MMR, given that you've had all, if you remember having been vaccinated. Again, if there's any question whatsoever about whether you are immune or not or still immune, a blood test can always be done. So that is the gold standard to answer the question. It takes, you know, going to the physician to get the blood test requisition, but nevertheless, that would be the gold standard. I think we can assume if you're 53 and have had vaccinations, then likely you have received your MMR vaccine. The other contraindication, and this is the, you know, we talked about immunocompromise. The other contraindication is pregnancy. You cannot give MMR vaccine during pregnancy, again, because it's a live attenuated virus and the fetus does not have, is essentially immunocompromised in this situation. So you don't want to introduce a virus that could potentially harm the baby or the mom who, if they're not immune. And so when we do that test, we do the titers, rubella, measles, mumps, rubella, those kind of things. If they are not immune, we let the mom know that they are not immune and that they need to stay away from anybody that they suspect may not be vaccinated or where there may be an outbreak of measles. So you have to take those precautions. Other questions. This is interesting. Hi, Doc. I got on the train at Lion Street on Friday and plastered on billboards is a medicine, Twinrix. And in big, bold letters is ask your doctor, is this right for you? I assume this is an antidepressant because the person in the ad didn't look happy. Well, first commercials and now billboards. Your profession is under pressure on time a lot for the wrong reasons. It's Mark on Elgin. Well, Mark, actually, Twinrix is a vaccination. It's a combination for hepatitis A and hepatitis B protection. It's usually given for people who are going to be traveling. And it's a series of three doses given over a period of 6 months, usually the initial dose. The second dose is a month later. The third dose is 6 months later. And that gives you lifelong protection against hepatitis A and B. If a person is traveling, there is an accelerated vaccination schedule, especially if they have to leave within a month. It's given initially, 1 week later, so at week number zero, week number one, week number three, and then there's a fourth dose given at 6 months. So there's an accelerated one for that. Twinrix can be confused with Trintellix, which is the antidepressant called Trintellix or Trintellix, whereas Twinrix is the vaccine itself. We did the immune compromised. Other questions, different from measles. A question about Ozempic and options now that is no longer available for non-diabetics. I asked my doctor, and it's not available because insurance companies are not covering it for people who are using it for weight loss. And I've talked about this many times already on the show about how cruel it is for insurance companies to be advising people who have already succeeded in losing weight, improved quality of life, in some cases, reducing the risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, osteoarthritis, moods are better, activity levels pick up, eating better, a whole host of things that are positive with weight loss. But in this case, now they're being told they're not going to be covered anymore. And so the question is, I used it about a year, can no longer get it from the pharmacy, and I'm afraid of regaining the weight I lost. This is from Lee. And yes, and this is what I mean about the cruelty, right? This is horrible when a person has succeeded in losing their weight. Medication works well. And let's face it, obesity and the damage caused by it is a chronic condition. It continues throughout your life. People continue to gain weight over time. For those new listeners to the show, as I know the show is going to be broadcast in other areas, on my website, drberrydworkin.com, there are many, many shows where I discuss this with Dr. Yoni Friedhoff and other experts in bariatric medicine about the importance of managing obesity for people and offering them hope and also offering them support to be able to lose weight and the positive health influences that happen from that. And so now when someone is faced with knowing that their medication has helped them, it has improved their quality of life, to be told by non-physicians at an insurance company that we're not going to cover it anymore, when the same medication that is sold as Wegovy, which is semaglutide — semaglutide is Ozempic, that's the generic name is called semaglutide. So you have Ozempic and you have Wegovy. Both are exactly the same, made by the same company. Wegovy is indicated for weight loss. That's how it's being marketed. That's all it is a marketing ploy. Whereas Ozempic is used to treat type 2 diabetes, again, marketed for that. Exactly the same drug, delivered exactly the same way, injected exactly the same way. The dosing may be a little bit different, but it's not overly so. And yet insurance companies are saying, well, you're prescribing it off-label, meaning that you're not prescribing it for the true reason, even though they know darn well that it is available as Wegovy, which is not available in Canada because of shortages, just not available and hasn't been released in Canada, even though it's been approved by Health Canada for use for weight loss. So people are using Ozempic, which logically makes sense. And they're not covering it anymore. And that, to me, is causing more harm than anything the company is thinking they're saving in terms of cost, because the consequences, and you know this as well as I do, the consequences of weight gain over time — type 2 diabetes, heart disease, stroke, osteoarthritis, peripheral vascular disease, kidney disease, a whole host of things that happen over time. So if you're preventing all of that, the person feels better, less harm to the person, less strain on the healthcare system. The cost is inconsequential when you consider that. But that's not how they're thinking, and they're putting people through hell because of that. And it's extremely frustrating for everybody involved. We're going to take a small break and come back with your calls and questions. Still lots more to come. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to House Calls. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Something missing when I need your love. Oh, hey, hey.
And we're going to go right back to the phone lines and speak to a very patient Kevin in Ottawa. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, doctor. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. I have a question for you about the yellow fever vaccine.
Yes.
My wife and I are traveling to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in January of 25. We're not going to the Amazon, but we do head south on a cruise from there.
Sure.
We're both over 70. Is it safe for us to take the yellow fever vaccine, or should we ask for an exemption through a doctor's letter or something like that?
So the first thing to confirm is whether you need the vaccine when you go down there. And there's an excellent website that we use, physicians use, and it's available for the public as well. It's called IAMAT, I-A-M-A-T, the International Association for Medical Assistance to Travelers. And they produce a couple of PDF documents for recommendations for immunizations that answer questions and it's updated every year, and it changes year to year. So what happens is that, for example, it'll say if you need yellow fever, they'll say if you are going to these particular regions in this country, you will need to get this vaccine. So it's IAMAT.org.
Okay.
And you can even do, if you do the search, you can go IAMAT PDF files or IAMAT vaccinations, and it'll take you right to the PDF download. And we use that. It's actually really, really good. It covers every country in the world. It gives all the exceptions, all the locations that are where someone should be vaccinated. Yellow fever vaccine is usually not given to most people unless there's very specific circumstances. They're going to be in a specific region where the exposure is going to be there. And yellow fever does have some complications when you use it. So if you're over 70, and I haven't used yellow fever vaccine, you need a license to be able to do that. That's where to be able to prescribe it. And so it is restricted in that way. And so the travel medicine physicians have much more experience with dealing with how to prescribe it or when to prescribe it. But ultimately, this resource will help you determine whether it is actually even needed at all.
Okay. Yeah, our travel agent said it's needed. Just anybody going to Brazil, it's on their country website. For the travel medicine doctors, is there a few places in Ottawa to go to?
Oh, you look up travel medicine, and there'll be a whole bunch of clinics that that do that. Yeah,
okay.
But even though a travel person said you need to get the vaccine, I would speak to someone who actually prescribes that vaccine to know whether you need it or not.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we will go on the website and we will look for a travel medicine doctor here. Thanks for your help.
You're very welcome. Have a good trip.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
We're going to go to line one and speak to Dave in Ottawa. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, doctor. Thank you. I am 71, and for the last couple of months, my left leg goes kind of almost numb. When I'm sleeping, it is much less, but when I'm standing, suddenly, even while walking also, it suddenly comes. But then I wiggle it, I kick it around, and then, you know, again, slowly it comes back.
Okay.
So it is almost numb like that. Why is it so? Is it?
So now this numbness, is it the entire leg or a specific part of the leg?
It goes from almost from the thigh and the hip joint to down.
Okay, and it's all around the thigh, or is it on the front part of the thigh? Is there a specific area that's numb?
It's almost all around.
Almost all around. Okay.
Yeah.
And you said it comes and goes, so it'll be there. How long does that numbness last when you have it?
I did not measure, but it lasts for a couple of minutes.
Okay. So, and these are important because if there was numbness caused by damage to the nerve, it wouldn't be something that would come and go very quickly, right? Because either the nerve is damaged or not damaged. So, and you note that when you're lying down, you don't have the numbness, but when you're walking around, you do have the numbness.
Mm-hmm. Walking around, sitting, standing, while cooking also. Okay, suddenly cooking, suddenly I feel the left leg numb.
Yeah.
Is it because I put more pressure on the left leg while standing?
So the issue is whether something is compressing the nerve that's causing the numbness. So is it, and the question is this positional? Meaning that is the anatomy such that something in the leg is pressing on the nerve when you're standing a certain way? or moving a mm-hmm. certain way, and that causes the numbness. It's like, you know, when you lie on your arm and your arm goes numb, and then you take yes. your arm off yeah. and then the tingling comes back and you get feeling back in your arm. Well, it's because you've compressed mm-hmm. the nerve, usually in the yeah. elbow, and the arm gets numb.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways to find out if there's any nerve damage or nerve compression is to see your family doctor. Hopefully you have one. And mm-hmm. Your family doctor might want to order what's known as a nerve conduction study, or it's called an EMG, an electromyogram. And an EMG, or a nerve conduction study, will measure the electrical, how electricity travels through the nerve. And if there's any mm-hmm. blockage in the nerve itself, it'll show up on there. It'll show at what point along the pathway there may be some mm-hmm. damage. And so that's mm-hmm. one of the ways to find out if there's mm-hmm. an anatomical change that's occurring that's causing that to happen. It's not mm-hmm. a stroke. It's certainly nothing like that, because it's coming and going very quickly. It's just the leg, and you have function of your leg. So it's not that. But ultimately, mm-hmm. it does require a bit more investigation to know if this is a harbinger of something that's happening and may get mm-hmm. worse over time, or whether this mm-hmm. is a positional thing and it's just a matter of accommodating and doing things that relieve or at least minimize the pressure that's put on the nerve itself.
Mm-hmm. Is this called sciatica? Or is it,
No, sciatica would be pain and not really numbness. Sciatica originates in the back, usually mm-hmm. because of a disc that has ruptured and it's pushing on mm-hmm. one of the nerve roots. And it wouldn't be mm-hmm. the entire leg. So the thigh itself has multiple nerves from the back that will supply sensation and motor function, that is the muscles working in the leg. Mm-hmm. And so if it's all the way around the leg itself, then mm-hmm. we're probably dealing with something different and not sciatica. Sciatica would go, mm-hmm. it's almost like an electric shock that runs from mm-hmm. the back down all the way to the toes, mm-hmm. and it would be extremely mm-hmm. painful to walk around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and when it is numb, sometimes I feel little pain around the hip joint to this one. So
yeah, so it might be something that's occurring around there, but again, I think mm-hmm. that having your physician look at this, it'd be very helpful, okay. because that way they'll be able to determine what's happening. Is it the hip joint? Is it arthritic change? Is it inflammation that's happening? Is there something pushing on the nerve? But that should mm-hmm. that should be the next step for you to do.
Okay. So the painkillers like Aleve or something, they don't help this kind of thing, eh?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend taking any medications for this until mm-hmm. you speak to your physician.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, Doctor.
You're very
thank
welcome, you. Dave. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Very quickly, I take 800 units of vitamin D during the winter months. Is that enough? Yeah, usually 800 to 1,000 is fine. Should it be taken throughout the year? If you go outside in the summer and your forearm is exposed to the sun for about 10 minutes, you get about 10,000 units of vitamin D produced by your body. So you don't have to take vitamin D during the summer if you're outside, even for a short duration. But during the winter, no harm in doing that. Unfortunately, I can't get to the multiple sclerosis question from Mark, but I can answer that next week for you, Mark. I want to give enough time to be able to answer that for you. My thanks to Stephen Ellsworth for producing House Calls. Your calls and questions, always appreciated. Love the questions. I learn as much as you do. I have to look things up, so it keeps me sharp, and I really appreciate you helping me out that way. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You've been listening to House Calls on Newstalk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. Be back next week with another edition. Have a great week.
Life's at the portrait that we become, stuck in a frame, unable to change. I was wrong. I'm late, but I'm here right now. Though I used to be romantic, I've forgotten.